Da, da, da. Good evening. It's time for another bedtime story. We're reading A Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens, and after that, whopper of a two-parter that was Chapter 4. Chapter 5 looks like it's going to be really short, so I may end up reading 5 and 6, but let's begin where we begin. Chapter 5, A Moment of Terror. 4 months had passed since Charles Darnay's trial. It was a Sunday afternoon, and Jarvis Lorry had come to call on the Manettes in their small house in London. While waiting in the doctor's room for his host to appear, Mr. Lorry's eyes fixed on the shoemaker's bench and tools, those terrible reminders of Dr. Manette's years in prisons. "What are you staring at?" demanded a voice behind him. Mr. Lorry turned at the sound of Miss Pross's voice. Remembering his first meeting with this wild-eyed woman in Dover 5 years ago, knowing of her devotion to Lucy and the doctor, he explained, "I was just wondering why the doctor still keeps those things." "I wouldn't know," snapped Miss Pross, "but I do know that we are having more visitors today. Another of these young men who are unworthy of my dear Lucy's time. Only one man could ever be worthy of her, my dear brother Solomon, if only he hadn't made that one mistake in life." Mr. Lorry knew that the one mistake made by Solomon Pross was taking all of his sister's belongings years ago and leaving her in poverty, but that did not concern him now. Just then, Dr. Manette and Lucy entered the room, and they all went out into the garden. They were sitting there talking of old buildings in London when Charles Darnay arrived. Joining in their discussion, Charles asked, "Have any of you seen much of the tower? I was imprisoned there before my trial."
"Lucy and I have been there quite a few times," answered the doctor. "It's quite interesting."
"Well, when I was there, I learned something very curious. It seems that while some repairs were being made, workmen came across an old dungeon that hadn't been used for many years. Every stone of its inner wall was covered with names, dates, and complaints written by the prisoners. While digging under the floor, the workmen found the ashes of a paper. Some unknown prisoner had written a note and hidden it from the jailer. What was written will never be known." Dr. Manette gasped, and his hands flew up to his head. Terror spread across his face for a moment.
"Are you ill, father?" cried Lucy.
No, dear, said the doctor, recovering himself quickly. "I just felt some raindrops. We should go inside."
But Mr. Lorry had seen that look of terror, and it sent a shudder through him. End of chapter 5. Chapter 6, The Marquise Saint-Evremonde. The Marquise Saint-Evremonde, a nobleman at the king's court in France, had attended a fancy reception at the palace one day in 1780. The expensive clothes and jewelry worn by the guests and the delicious feast spread on the table contrasted sharply with the rags and the empty stomachs of the masses of people who lived within a short ride of the palace. When the reception was over, the Marquise, a haughty, handsomely dressed man of about 60, climbed into his coach, anxious to leave Paris as quickly as possible. He had been ignored by the king at the reception, and his anger was still with him, so he rather enjoyed the reckless speed with which his driver was handling his coach, for it made the common people scatter before him. As the coach swooped around one corner, a sickening thud was heard. The horses reared, and loud cries reached the Marquise's ears. He would have ordered the driver to proceed had not 20 hands grabbed the horse's reins. Leaning out the window, he saw a tall man in a nightcap picking up a bundle from under the horse's hooves. The man knelt down in the mud and began howling like a wild animal.
"Pardon, Monsieur the Marquise," said a ragged man, "but it is his child."
When the man rose and rushed toward the carriage, the Marquise reached for his sword.
"Killed!" screamed the father. "Dead!"
The Marquise looked out at the crowd and reached for his purse.
"I can't understand why you people can't take care of yourselves and your children," he said. "One of you is always in the way of the coach. To think that you might have injured my horses! Here, give the man this."
He tossed a gold coin down into the street. At that moment, a man rushed over to the sobbing father and comforted him.
"Be brave, Gaspard. It is better for the poor child to die without pain than to live with the pain of hunger and such injuries."
"You are a wise man," said the Marquise, smiling. "What is your name?"
"I am Defarge, the wine seller."
"Pick that up and spend it as you will," said the Marquise, tossing another gold coin out of the carriage. But as he sat back in his seat with a satisfied smile, the coin came flying back into the carriage. "Who threw that?" shouted the Marquise. He looked at the spot where Defarge had been standing. The poor father lay sobbing on the pavement, and beside him stood a dark-haired woman knitting. Getting no reply from the silent peasants, only a long, hard stare from Madame Defarge, the Marquise ordered his carriage on. Hours later, the carriage entered a poor village at sunset and stopped at a posting house, a stable, to change horses. Many poor peasants gathered around the coach, including a grizzled man in a blue cap. "Monsieur the Marquise," said the man, removing his cap as he approached, "I am a road fixer. As your carriage was coming along the road outside the village, I saw a man swinging by the chain underneath it." "Who was he?" snapped the Marquise, who hated to waste time talking with people of the lower classes. "He wasn't from this part of the country. I never saw him before in my life, monsieur." "What did he look like?" "Your carriage was traveling too quickly for me to get a good look, monsieur." The Marquise sent for Monsieur Gabal, who was in charge of the posting house and who thus knew whenever a stranger entered the village. "Get your hands on this stranger if he tries to spend the night in this village," ordered the Marquise. Then to his driver he shouted, "Be off!" The coach drove off at great speed, and later that evening the Marquise arrived at his castle to keep an appointment with his nephew Charles, who was arriving from England. When the two were seated over dinner, the Marquise asked Charles Darnay why he had returned to France. "Sir," said Charles, "ours is an honorable family, but we have mistreated the people, and now we are paying for it. My father punished everyone who interfered with his pleasures, and you, my father's twin brother and heir to his property, have also done wrong. My mother, on her deathbed, begged me to be merciful to the people, and to make up for the wrongs you both have done. I have been trying to do this for years, and have returned to France to continue to help the poor peasants." "We were born into this family," said the Marquis sternly, "and I, for one, will fight to keep these revolutionary peasants from changing the ruling system in France, even if it means fighting and imprisoning you as well." "This property and my country are both lost to me," Charles answered sadly. "France is a land of mystery, misery and ruin. I will live somewhere else and work to support myself." "Ha!" cried the Marquis, looking around the luxurious room. "You will live in England, I suppose?" "Yes, there I will not feel ashamed of my family name, for I do not use it." And that's about where we have to break chapter 6. Good night.